This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Friday to you. Happy July 1st. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. It is Wake Up Call SportsNap Radio. Yesterday, we got news after news after news. Waited for free agency to start last night in the NBA, but boy, it got really, really started off in college football. USC and UCLA heading to the Big Ten. A story that came out of nowhere. And both of these schools will now be heading to a new conference in 2024. The Big Ten goes from 10 schools to 14 schools to now to 16 schools. The name is just a formality, has nothing to do with it. No more mathematics going on in the Big Ten. But it does do something rather interesting for the conference. It moves the conference from sea to shining sea. It now goes coast to coast. It is basically said there is no territory limit to the Big Ten conference. They have gone to the East Coast. They grabbed Maryland. They got Rutgers. Penn State is over on that side of the equation. And now they're all the way over into California with USC and UCLA. How did this happen? Why did this happen? We will talk about that. But we've got to get to one of the big stories in the NBA, and it had nothing to do with any free agent signing, and it had nothing to do with any other trade. It had everything to do with Kevin Durant, who saw the scene in Brooklyn and looked around and said to the team, yeah, I'd like to get out of here. 3 years to the day that he signed a contract with Brooklyn, leaving Golden State and luring Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan with him. They were supposed to create a super team. They were supposed to win multiple championships. They did nothing. They didn't even get to an NBA Finals. And Durant now wants out, which is really interesting because when Kyrie Irving was talking and we were buzzing about whether or not he would take an option, which didn't look like it was going to be possible, and whether he'd get a max contract, which also didn't look like it was going to be possible, and possibly being traded, and all of those things that we were discussing about Kyrie Irving's future. He finally opts in on his last year of that contract. He opts in on $36.5 million after realizing nobody wanted him. And I thought this is exactly what Kevin Durant would want, but it's apparently what Kevin Durant didn't want, because now he's looking at Brooklyn and Kyrie and that mess and said, no, thank you. He's not without blame in this mess. Brooklyn is, he is, it has been an absolute 3-year disaster. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on NBA free agency. But the big story out of the NBA yesterday was Kevin Durant requesting a trade to get out of Brooklyn. And it came 3 years after he agreed to go to Brooklyn. Create that super team. Try to shed off the label that he was just some hired gun to go get championships with an already loaded Golden State team. But nevertheless, I thought to myself when, again, I was talking about this at the top of the hour, Kyrie Irving was dealing with his issue. And I thought, and I remember asking this, is anybody talking to Kevin Durant? What exactly would he like to see in the negotiations with Kyrie Irving? You know, Kyrie had an option on the table. He wanted a max deal. Brooklyn didn't want to give him a max deal. And then Kyrie said, all right, well, then I'd like to be traded. And then Brooklyn said, all right, go ahead, find some trade partners and maybe we'll talk. And he went back and said, yeah, I did that. And I'll take that option, I guess. And then Brooklyn said, yeah, we thought so. And then Kevin Durant, I'm thinking to myself, well, Kevin Durant's locked in for a while. He's going to want Kyrie there because even though Kyrie is flaky, doesn't play, the vaccination thing is done. He's going to be able to play home games. That's fine. Yes, he takes time off for personal reasons, various political issues. But in the end, he's the best player that he's going to have on the team. They're not going to go out and get another Kyrie Irving. So when Kyrie's on the floor, he averages 27 points a game. So got to get him on the floor more. And I'm thinking if you're Kevin Durant, you're still going to be a Brooklyn Net. You're going to want a point guard like Kyrie Irving rather than anybody else. So I remember saying, does anybody want to get into the what Kevin Durant thinks about this whole Kyrie Irving thing? I guess the right question should have been asking all along is, what does Kevin Durant think about Kevin Durant's situation in Brooklyn? Because this kind of popped up, not out of nowhere per se, but it kind of did. Like, now he's saying, yeah, by the way, this is a mess. I'm out. I want out. Can you get me out of here? And apparently Brooklyn agrees with him because they are going to be seeking a huge haul from some teams that are interested in acquiring Kevin Durant. And that includes the Phoenix Suns and the Miami Heat, which are high on Kevin Durant's wish list. Oh, by the way, is there anything familiar or anything that's something that's similar about the Phoenix Suns and the Miami Heat? Anything at all? Can you think of anything off the top of your head as to why Phoenix and Miami are on top of Kevin Durant's wish list? Does it have anything to do with the fact that the Phoenix Suns were the number one seed in the Western Conference going into the postseason? Oh, and the Miami Heat were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference? And both played in the NBA Finals over the last 2 years? Miami 2 years ago and Phoenix last season?
You mean to tell me it's not about warm weather destinations?
Yeah, it's not necessarily about warm weather. It's about, all right, I'll just join a team that's already built to being one of the tops in the NBA.
I mean, his first choice was probably going back to Golden State, but he's like, I can't do that again.
I can't do that. They just won a title. What would it look like? If I did that a second time just to grab more rings, what will that do? So this is a mess. This is a disaster. No matter how you look at it, this was a disaster. And it's not necessarily a disaster because they didn't win NBA championships. Although, be it, that's kind of on the list, but it's not the primary reason. Kyrie Irving destroyed this team. He destroyed any potential this team could have had. He wrecked it. And he wrecked it because, again, not getting vaccinated, so he got kept out half of, for the home games this past season until that was lifted. But also because, again, he just disappears and he takes time off all the time and he's not reliable. And I think that drove James Harden nuts and he wanted out of it. And I think Kevin Durant sees the writing on the wall as well and goes, you know what? I can't do this either. They hardly played together. They hardly played together with James Harden when they got him. It has not turned out to be anything at all like we thought 3 years ago. That was an NBA championship favorite, and they never played in the finals. And getting swept out of the Boston, by the Boston Celtics made, I think, Durant look around and go, you know what? I can ride this out because my contract says I should ride this out. But you know what? In the end, I could also go, get me the hell out of here because this is a mess. Now, if he doesn't like playing with Kyrie, okay, fine. If he doesn't like Steve Nash, fine, but you're an influential member of this basketball team. When Kenny Atkinson was available to be the head coach, you didn't exactly support that. So this is on Durant as much as it's on Brooklyn and as much as it's on Kyrie. Everybody involved in this, it was a mess. Now, I will say this, okay? There's sometimes we go really, really critical on something like this that didn't work, right? We go, ugh. What a disaster. And it is a disaster, no doubt about it. But 3 years ago, remember, it was worth all of it. The idea of Durant and Kyrie and even DeAndre Jordan was very, very attractive. The addition of James Harden was very attractive. It's now looking that Brooklyn loses out on this deal completely. Harden is going to be on the Philadelphia 76ers. The Rockets are enjoying the rewards of getting rid of him and what they got from Brooklyn. It's turning it, and Brooklyn is going to end up getting a haul. Don't get me wrong, but they're not going to get a haul that's going to put them in a place like they were 3 years ago when we thought that they would get multiple championships. He went to Brooklyn for that one thing, which was get rid of the label of, again, I just went to Golden State to get a couple of rings because you all don't judge greatness without championships. And I'm not winning one in Oklahoma City, so I might as well win one there. And he was a two-time finals MVP, and that still didn't change that label.
So he had to go to Brooklyn, and he was like, all right, I'm going to go to Brooklyn. I'm going to build my own big team, and we're going to win titles, and then I'll have that label of one of the greatest all time without sort of the baggage of, yeah, and he won two championships joining a team that was already built to win titles. But it was worth the gamble for Brooklyn. Of course, he's the best player in the NBA. It was worth the gamble. But it should have been handled way better than this. Somewhere along the line, and I don't know what they could have done with Kyrie, to be honest with you, because he's just too unreliable. But it turned into three guys that should have been playing together, winning titles, to now one guy on a one-year option that doesn't really want to be there and doesn't really want to play. Golly, what a disaster. What a mess.
It's crazy.
It's really crazy.
I love how you said it before. This was a team that once it was all put together, it was like, who's going to stop them?
Right.
And apparently everybody and themselves. Because it's unfathomable that team never made it to a final.
You know, it's like trying to make a big meal without some of the with missing some of the ingredients. So you just make it anyway. All right, it didn't turn out the way I wanted to, but it was worth the try. It was worth the try, but it should have been better. It should have been much better than 3 years later. Everybody's out. And Harden wasn't there at the beginning, but still I want to throw him into this mix too. I mean, he saw this situation and was like, get me the hell out of here. And I think Durant went, yeah, me too. Get me out of here. And the Nets, because again, the Nets could play hardball here and say, no, you're staying. We're not trading you. But I think the Nets are smart. I think they're like, look, we get it. And we could get some serious, serious talent from pick up some of these teams. We could get some real, you know, and go from there. But you had the best player in the game, and you never got to an NBA Finals because you had a point guard that was absolutely selfish and couldn't be on that court. And do I blame Durant? No. But at the same time...
But he kind of falls into it, right?
Can I just say this? I don't want to compare... I hate doing this. I really do, because I try to avoid this, because others do this and it makes me cringe. I never want to criticize a person because they don't have a personality trait. Do you know what I'm saying? Like when people say, like, it's unfair to say to somebody, you should be more of an introvert or more of an extrovert. And maybe they're the exact opposite, right? Like you need to speak up more. Well, maybe they don't like speaking up. Maybe you should take a back seat. Maybe they're just a natural leader. Like it's hard to criticize somebody. But did Kevin Durant ever give you the feeling like he was, quote, in charge? Like LeBron James is in charge, right? LeBron James, he's the de facto GM. Players he wants, those are the players he gets. And while he got Kyrie, I almost felt like he was just a silent observer, a silent participant. Nothing I can do about it. Like, there's reports in New York that he doesn't like Steve Nash. Well, then who did you want for the job? Who did you want? Say it. Tell Sean Marks. Tell the owner. Tell someone in the organization. Tell the media. Who do you want to play with? What do you think of Kyrie's situation? What do you think about James Harden wanting to leave? Like, LeBron, at least for everything that I criticize LeBron for, at least he's in charge. And he says, this is all right. I don't want this. I want this. I want that. And go do it. And in this case, where was Kevin Durant's leadership in all of this? And instead, what does he want to do? Oh, I want to, put me on a team that's on top of the conference. Put me on a team that could go to the finals. Because Miami was pretty close to going to the finals, and Phoenix should have gone to the finals. And now he wants to join those organizations? Gee, way to stay true to who you are, Kevin Durant. Yeah, because he ain't going to Orlando, right? Like, or anything like that. He's not exactly going to join the Timberwolves. No, he's jumping on that first flight that he can to a winner. Just like he did years ago when he went to Golden State. All right, on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll get more into the NBA and the free agencies, some of the names and players that are going elsewhere, and some of them are staying put. But coming up, we got to get to this college football thing. And, oh, by the way, it's Bobby Bonilla Day. We'll tell you all about that in case you're whole new to the whole Bobby Bonilla thing. Welcome to the club. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day today. It is also the happy birthday, 35th happy birthday to sports radio in general. On this date in 1987, WFAN launched in New York. So happy birthday, sports radio. And you know what? It's so funny. Back in the late 80s, they did not think a 24-hour sports radio station would work in the city of New York. If there was one place it was going to work, it was going to be New York City. But people didn't think it was gonna work, and now look at it. Now it's a format all over the country. You can find it in small markets. You can find it in rural America. You can find it everywhere. So happy birthday to sports radio. I went from an aspiring young play-by-play announcer to wanting to do this rather quickly as I was getting into the business, because this hosting shows was the thing that I wanted. As I started to develop getting into the business and whatnot, I got in, I was an anchor. I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. That was my dream. And as I got more and more in the business, I started liking hosting shows. I would do it every now and then. And I started going, this is much better. I think I much prefer this. And that's where I decided to pursue it. And I'm glad I did, because I've enjoyed the sports talk radio aspect of it, even though it gets maligned every now and then. But it is so much fun. So happy birthday, WFAN, and then starting the industry we know and love now. But it is Bobby Bonilla Day today. Now, listen, for those of you who know what it is, sit back and let me educate the youngsters out there who don't really know what this is. Maybe they've heard it and they go, what exactly happened? Why do they call this Bobby Bonilla Day? All right, so today's the day that the New York Mets are going to give yet another annual payout to Bobby Bonilla, who agreed to a buyout back in 2000. And what Bobby Bonilla's agent did was the Mets owed him $5.9 million at the time, which is a lot of money back then, but it was still, something a check the Mets could have cut. It was 1999. The Mets had released Bonilla. They owed him nearly $6 million. Again, could have wrote the check and just said, call it a day. But his agent offered the Mets an opportunity for a deal. They said, look, down the line, not now, but down the road, why don't you start paying Bobby $1.19 million, nearly $1.2 million, starting in 2011. So we're going to look ahead 11 years and ended in 2035. Now, while it'll amount to almost $30 million, you only owe him about $1 million a year. And every July 1st, you cut him a check. And the Mets agreed to it. So instead of handing him six now, they agreed to give him just over $1 million a year from 2011 to 2035. Now, you may think, why in the world would the Mets do that? $6 million, even back in 1999... wasn't a fortune in current terms of Major League Baseball. It was a lot of money, don't get me wrong. I mean, we see astronomical salaries now, but back in 99, $6 million, a check for $6 million was still a big deal. But the Mets could have wrote it. But the Mets did it because they were involved in the Bernie Madoff scandal. They were investing money with Bernie Madoff's firm, and they were making incredible money. If you know anything about what Bernie Madoff was doing, he was giving his investors incredible returns, but it was a Ponzi scheme. So the Mets were thinking that they were involved in an investor that was going to make them a fortune off their money. They basically did this with the idea that not one nickel of the $1.19 million that they were going to give Bonilla every single year was going to come through any of their income. They thought, well, we're making a killing off what Bernie's doing for us in investments. We'll just give him the money from the investments, some of the money that we're making off the investments. So they're like, let's just put that on autopilot. Bernie's making us close to 20% on our money. Why don't we just give Bonilla some of the windfall that were making out on the investment. And for a little bit, that seemed to be working until the Ponzi schemes started to collapse. Now the Mets are on the hook for this income. So in a way, I kind of see what the Mets were thinking. Why take $5.9 million out of the books, out of the accounting, just to pay them to go away, when we're making so much money off of this investment firm? Why don't we just roll with that? Because the good times never end in the stock game, right? I mean, stock market gains last forever, don't they? Last time I checked my history books, the stock market always makes money. It's almost like a guaranteed, it's like winning at a casino. It just happens all the time. It never goes down. You never lose. Somehow, some way, they thought that that hedge fund was going to give them money for every year until 2035. The market was never going to turn on them. So the Mets owe this money every single year. $1.19 million, a check that they are going to give Bobby Bonilla. Now, this is kind of like Bobby Bonilla light, but the Brett Saberhagen also gets a check today, but he only gets $250,000. He kind of got the same deal. Not exactly.
I got the raw end of the deal.
But yeah, he got a buyout where he gets deferred payments of $250,000. So he doesn't get $1.19 million, but $250,000.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It is.
I love this.
I think athletes should get I think athletes should do this all the time.
All the time.
I think they should do it all the time. I think they should say, look,
hey, it makes good financial sense.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, I mean, yeah, you know, you want the big money right up front. You want to open up that bank account and see like tens of millions of dollars in there. But there's just something about, for Bobby Bonilla, this financial security has until 2035 of getting $1 million
exactly
once a year.
But at the same time, it kind of reminds me of when, you know, they tell you when you win the lottery to take the lump sum. They're like, if you win $500 million and they're offering you $275 lump sum, take the $275 lump sum. You're like, but I want the $500 million. Like, yeah, but you could take the $275, you invest it, you'll be making as much money or if not more, you know, all those calculations. But I think if you're a player and you've got some financial security based on money that you've already made, and there's an opportunity to what Bobby Bonilla did, turn $5.9 million that you would get in 1999 into $30 million until 2035, it just sounds like a no-brainer to me. I would do that because, again, athletes have a tendency, like entertainers, they have a tendency to blow through a lot of their money, and next thing you know, a lot of them are broke. This at least guarantees that $1.19 million is coming to your bank account every year. And if you blow it all, if you take it to a casino or you buy a luxury, rent out a luxury yacht for a weekend, and boy, you're like, oh my God, it cost me $1.6 million. You know, $1.19 million is coming for you 365 days later. So happy Bobby Bonilla Day. How fantastic is that? And good for his agent for seeing an opportunity to do that. Being like, Bobby, you're all set. You got a lot of money. You know what? Let's do this with the Mets. What are you going to do with $5.9 million? You're going to stick it in the account, put it away? What are you going to do? Here's a chance to get nearly $1.2 million a year forever. I mean, until 2035, for crying out loud. I mean, I don't know Bobby Bonilla's age, but like in 2035, what's he going to be, 70? Maybe, you know, maybe even older than that. I have no idea how old he is.
Yeah, I don't either.
But whatever. It's getting a $1.2 million check forever.
I wonder if it was...
Now, by 2035, does $1.2 million be like getting, you know, $500,000?
$10 in the mail.
With all the inflation? $1.19 million don't go as far as it used to.
I wonder how long it took him to sign the deal.
I bet it took a while. I wonder if in 99 if it seemed like a smart
year. They kept going back and forth
year.
Like, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, I wonder if in 99 that seemed like a good idea at the time. Like, he's like, listen, this doesn't start till 2011. Like, yeah, you're not going to get a penny of this until 2011. It's like, God, that's 11 years from now. Hold on. I might not even be alive. Yeah, you'll be alive. Don't worry. And it'll work. But at the same time, people like instant gratification. That's why I wonder if he hesitated on it. We kind of want it now. But good move. All right, coming up next, what in the world happened in college football yesterday? You want to talk about coming out of nowhere, USC, UCLA.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
I got to tell you something. Michael in Atlanta is kind of like the show's calculator when it comes to different math things.
Yes.
Because you and I are like, I don't know, 10% of what? I don't even know. What is that? $1 million? What? I don't know. And then Michael comes on Twitter and he goes, guys, it's this. So Michael figured out, if you took my Bobby Bonilla's $5 million back in 99 and using Madoff math, right? Just the Madoff math, what he was given, getting what they were getting from Bernie Madoff, the Mets would have made $163 million by 2035. So you could see where their accountants and brain trust were figuring out that they were still making a lot of money, and they would just slide Bobby Bonilla $30 million out of this investment pool. So, yeah, that's what they did. Imagine the fear and absolute agony of the Mets front office when Bernie Madoff, when that Ponzi scheme broke apart, when that got caught and broke down. Not to mention all the other people that lost everything. I mean, that's what the Mets, the Mets' fate pales in comparison to people and who just lost everything. He devastated people. Imagine working your whole life and you've saved up and you've made good money in your life and you had millions of dollars and you gave it to him and you're like, I want to turn this into just tens and tens of millions of dollars when I retire. And then you find out it's all gone, all of it. You're not getting any of it back. They're going to try to sell some stuff, but you're not going to get any money. You're not going to get nearly the money back that you put in. Devastating. And the Mets must have been like, oh no, really? What do we do? But Steve Cohen, he doesn't have those problems. Steve Cohen's riding high, Mr. Billionaire. So he had to take on this. So Bobby Bonilla Day today. So we talked about Kevin Durant, and I said, look, I didn't really, the Kevin Durant wanting out of Brooklyn thing kind of came out of nowhere. But the other news that came out yesterday out of nowhere was USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 and joining the Big Ten in 2024. You want to talk about a story that nobody saw coming. Even the people that cover college football and college sports on a regular basis that are dialed into this thing thought yesterday's news was earth-shattering, shocking, earthquake, seismic when in the college football world. So, as I said earlier, this really takes the Big Ten to another place. It takes the Big Ten to a place no other conference is going, which is expand your territorial map from sea to shining sea, coast to coast. You now have 16 teams that run from Maryland, New Jersey, New York, all the way to Los Angeles. And they don't have any problem with this whatsoever. There's no geographical feel for the Big Ten. They don't care if you don't think of it as that sort of Midwestern conglomeration of schools. You know, the Michigan, Notre, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio. Nope, they don't care. They are expanding. Now, for USC and UCLA, why would they do this? Well, the answer is really simple, and you know the answer. It was money. The media rights for the Pac-12 garnered every team within the Pac-12 less than $20 million. Big Ten teams separated that media money, and every one of them got over 40. You add these two schools to the mix, those media rights are going to go up and up, and UCLA and USC are going to get a huge share of that pie. The football is going to be better. Their profile is going to be better. The one pull back in all of this is the lesser sports are going to now be competing in a conference in which it may not be as easy to send the volleyball team out to Maryland for a match and then stop off on the way to Penn State and maybe a trip to Illinois. That it becomes more complicated. That some other sports within the USC and UCLA program have to be in other conferences because the Big Ten schools don't have that particular sports. I'm looking at you, beach volleyball.
Wait, but Big Ten doesn't have beach volleyball?
They should. Anybody have beach volleyball?
Come on,
they should have beach volleyball.
You could do it on a lake.
Sure you could. Plenty of beaches on Lake Michigan. But nevertheless, this is a big, big deal because this is a direct response, again, to the SEC grabbing Texas and Oklahoma. because the Big Ten even joined up with the ACC and the Pac-12 to form an alliance. Remember that? I think the Big 12 was involved in it too. Remember the alliance? Well, they just poached two teams from the Pac-12. Now, does this mean the Pac-12 is dead? Should it die? If you're Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Oregon State, Arizona, Arizona State, do you run now? Cal, Berkeley, do you run? Do you go look around? Do you start dangling your school to these other conferences? Or if you're the Pac-12, do you buckle down and go, all right, let's go get some schools. Let's go get them. Pete Futek, collegefootballnews.com, his column today, I thought it had a really good point. If you're looking at football, this is not a good school. But if you're looking at profile and markets, this is a great school. Go get Kansas. You're going to get Kansas City and the St. Louis area. Even though Kansas is sort of tucked a little further from St. Louis, you could still tap into that market a little bit. They just won the national championship in college basketball. San Diego State should be an absolute no-brainer. Go out and get UNLV and grab Las Vegas. You can go get markets. Futek's point, I think, has got to be made here, and I'm going to give him credit for this. Too many of us look at the sport. Too many of us look at the quality of football. Don't. This is not about that. If you go after schools, go after the market. Don't worry about the sports. They come and go. All right? The teams that are hot today will be dead tomorrow, and the teams that are dead today will be good tomorrow. Go get markets. You need markets. You need fans, and that's how you build your media rights. That's how you make money off the media. So go get San Diego. Go get UNLV. Go get Kansas. If you cannot do that, you are going to get poached. Because if you're Arizona and Arizona State, why wouldn't you go to the Big 12? If you're Washington and Washington State, why don't you look and see if you can jump in on the Big 10 party? There doesn't seem to be any restraints on the geographical area now. And if you're the SEC, what do you do? Do you want to go after more schools, to go after what the Big Ten is starting to gobble up? Once you open the territory, once you go from sea to shining sea, everybody's fair game. There is no need to worry about geographic limitations. If you're the SEC, do you make a phone call to Kansas? Do you make a phone call to teams in the Big 12 that are still hanging out in that conference? Do you reach out to a North Carolina? Now, if you're the SEC, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia, Virginia Tech, fine, go grab those. But they don't change your boundary all that much. They're still technically southeastern states, southeastern schools. You want to go grab Clemson, too, while you're at it? Fine. Georgia Tech? Fine. But you're staying within the confines of your geographical limitation. Are you, if you're the Southeast Conference, do you want to get a Boise State? Do you want to go after other schools that are hanging around in that Midwest? Do you want to grab, like I said, Baylor? Do you want to grab Texas Tech? Where do you want to go? Do you want to grab a TCU in Dallas?
I'm actually surprised no one wants to go after Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, get some of the money.
We don't know.
Well, no, that's true. Because like we didn't know
USC and UCLA were on the table. We don't know. Oregon could be up for grabs. All of this is wide open, and every school now has to start thinking about, all right, what are we going to do? Like, if you're the Pac-12, you can't survive without UCLA and USC. You can't. If you were getting $20 million on your media rights with them, what do you think it's going to be if you stand pat and don't add anybody else? But here's the other point, okay? And again, I'm going to give Pete Futek credit for this. He made the point where you're not going to replace Damon and Giambi, but you can moneyball this thing. Right? UCLA and UCLA, powerful schools, major market. You lost Los Angeles. You're not getting it back. But you can make it up with a San Diego, a Kansas, a UNLV. You can make it up with a combination of multiple schools. You're not going to do it with two because you're not going to make up LA with two, but you might be able to calm it down with four. That's a big move. Now, does this mean anything for college football? Because many of you out there are probably like, well, in the end, I'm an Auburn fan. What do I care? Not really. It's not going to really change the landscape all that much. But I do think there is something here about the possibility of this now forcing. If there were any holdouts on the expansion of the college football playoff, And there seems to be, because it's like it like pops up like we're going to go to 8, and then somewhere along the line they go, no, we're keeping it at 4. I think these are the moves that would create more of an interest from these schools and the university presidents to go, okay, I get it now. If you're USC, you've got Lincoln Riley, right? You are USC, right? You recruit highly talented players. You're now playing in a different conference, a better conference. You're going to go up against Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan, Michigan State. Those are the schools you're going to be competing against. You're still going to keep Notre Dame on your schedule because you're not going to want to get rid of that as a non-conference game. So you're going to put together a good schedule. If you're the USC president right now, do you think you want to roll the dice and hope you go undefeated or one loss to participate in a four-team playoff? No, you are not. If you're Texas and you're about ready to go to the SEC, you think one loss? You think you should just get one, you think you're only going to have one loss with Arch Manning down the road to get you in the playoff? No. Same, I'm looking at you, Oklahoma. We get it. It's going to have to be, look, these conferences are tough. My schedule is tough. Two losses is no joke. It's still a wonderful season. It needs to be recognized in some capacity. Look, we may be playing a top 10 opponent 7 times in our schedule. You got to give us a little bit of a break. And that's where you're going to start seeing more and more of these university presidents going, all right, let's take this thing to 8 games. Let's start putting some 2-loss teams in this thing and not punishing these schools who are now participating in the great big conference of college football. How does it, what I'm interested in is like, again, if you're a conference commissioner, and I'm looking at the Pac-12 and some other schools that didn't quite do it the way they should have done it, you've got to prioritize football. That it's the bread of everything. It is the money that supports everything. College basketball, men's and women's college basketball, as popular as it is, as important as March Madness is, dwarfs in comparison to what the conference is bringing in with football. And if you don't prioritize football, if you don't make decisions based on football, you are going to fail miserably. So you have got to put together something, a plan of something that prioritizes football. And I don't think the Pac-12 was doing that. And I think UCLA and USC looked and said in their conference, I'm basically imagining the conversation of those two schools going, why in the world are we splitting money with Cal, Arizona State, Washington State, when we are the main drivers of this thing? The only reason Pac-12 football is interesting is because of basically three schools, Oregon and us two. Maybe Washington every now and then in the last few years, but it's mostly Oregon, us, and USC. If you're UCLA, for example, why are we getting less than $20 million from media rights when every single conference would love to have us and we could double that? That's what you're getting in the world of college athletics now. And you have to, because it's expensive. It's expensive to send these teams and to support all the other non-revenue sports. So good for those two schools. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll talk more about that as the morning goes along as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Ron and I are going to be off on Monday, so enjoy the 3-day weekend. So this is kind of your last fix of Wake Up Call until you get into the weekend. So enjoy it, absorb it, and enjoy the hot dog eating contest from Coney Island on Monday. Happy July 4th. I told you I was so excited for this 3-day weekend. I have nothing to do. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything. I don't have plans. I'm probably more excited about this 3-day weekend than I am like Memorial Day or Labor Day or any of the other ones that pop up on the calendar.
I bet you can't guess what I'm doing this weekend.
Baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're always doing baseball. It's the life of a baseball
shocker.
Sport parent.
Yep, shocker.
I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, you know what? I loved watching you play sports. I love taking you to the sports, but Dad's going to be honest. I'm glad those years are over. I'm glad you could drive yourself. You can participate in what you're doing. Glad we're not doing that. Man, we used to be there all the time. My daughter's soccer games used to be all day.
Yeah.
All day. 8 a.m., 5 p.m. My son's track and field. Track and field is the worst. He'd be in four events. And they would be like, the first event will be at 9:30. The last event, 7 o'clock at night. All day fun at the state championships.
See, the games, I don't mind so much. I'm still in that, but I can't wait for him to be able to drive himself to practice.
Yeah. The practice used to drive me crazy.
Yeah, it's all the way across town.
I know.
It's no easy way to get there. Come on.
Yeah, but I'm kind of glad those years are done. So, but, you know, the trade-off is they end up going away to college and you don't get them around for the holidays anymore. So that's the trade-off for us. But, yeah, no, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to watch fireworks from our neighborhood if they're allowed this year. We've had no rain. I had rain yesterday, but I don't know if it's enough to keep the dryness that we're experiencing. Hopefully we'll get more rain this weekend so we can have 4th of July fireworks on Monday night. But I'll be in my backyard watching them from my, you know, chair. But other than that, I got nothing planned. My wife was like, you want to go to the farmer's market this weekend? I'm like, hell yeah, I want to go to the farmer's market this weekend. Like, I got nothing else.
Kettle corn,
whatever it is.
My favorite thing at the
Samples
farmer's market,
of
man.
Fudge. Yeah, kettle corn's great. So, and maybe I'll buy, like, I don't know, some homemade soap.
How about some jams?
Maybe so.
Some jams.
Whatever. $10 quart of ice cream, homemade, whatever else, and meats and different vegetables. I don't know. We'll find something. All right. Wake up call continuing.